I'm Peter Block, and it's Monday afternoon here at the ACC 20 World Congress of Cardiology, virtual this year, of course. And this is a wrap-up for day three on Monday. With me is Deepak Bhatt from the Brigham and Women's in Boston. Deepak, welcome. We're talking about the major trials that were covered on this day, and I'm going to start out with the TECO trial. We've talked a lot about ticagrelor and novel anticoagulants the last few days here. This is a trial of ticagrelor and aspirin for 3 months and then randomized to ticagrelor alone or continuing the combination of ticagrelor and aspirin for a year. And let's, you know, guess what the answer is. The answer is ticagrelor alone wins after 3 months of therapy. It's an interesting issue because we've always struggled with how much or how little we should give patients after a PCI. The incidence of stent thrombosis is relatively low, so we're talking about low outcomes regardless. But the fascinating thing about this is that a combination of an antiplatelet, that is aspirin here, plus ticagrelor, produces a lot more bleeding, and bleeding is what really pushed the outcomes here. They anticipated it would be non-inferior. It turned out to be superior. And so this is very much like the TWILIGHT trial, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And I think it is going to be pretty much of a game changer in what we're learning about this combination. Deepak, your thoughts?
So I think overall you're right that is TECO is very much consistent with what TWILIGHT had already showed us. That is that in patients undergoing PCI, the 3 months of aspirin ticagrelor followed by ticagrelor monotherapy, that is dropping the aspirin, produces ischemic outcomes that at least in the intermediate term, in about a year of follow-up after that, are roughly comparable with about half as much major bleeding. So less bleeding, similar ischemic outcomes, maybe a little bit of a simpler regimen, that is one drug, albeit a twice a day a dosing of ticagrelor versus two drugs. So for simplicity's sake, for everything other than maybe cost's sake, it seems like a winning strategy. I would, however, caution that there are a bunch of other trials that show that extended duration dual antiplatelet therapy in high ischemic risk, low bleeding risk patients are useful. So to me, the remaining challenge is how to reconcile all those different data sets.
Comes back to clinical judgment, doesn't it? We're really talking about, in the broad range of concepts, subsets of patients. If they're very low bleeding risk, you may be able to get away with a combination. But if there is a question in your mind about whether or not these folks will bleed, a ticagrelor alone, at least to be, is probably safe. Agreed?
Oh, totally. So I think in patients that by the eyeball test seem to be at high bleeding risk, they're dropping a DAP strategy at 3 months and adopting a monotherapy strategy with an ADP receptor antagonist makes a lot of sense. And the bulk of data now support that ADP receptor antagonist should be ticagrelor. There are some other studies from Korea and Japan that looked at clopidogrel instead of ticagrelor monotherapy in that setting. Those trials were also showing less bleeding and non-inferiority for ischemic outcomes. But I think in terms of quality of data, amount of data, TWILIGHT in particular takes things over the goal line for ticagrelor monotherapy after an initial 3 months of dual therapy with ticagrelor and aspirin.
Okay, so now that you've introed the TWILIGHT trials, we actually have two of them, TWILIGHT complex and TWILIGHT diabetes. And I'm going to just give it to you for these two because now the combination of these trials, I think, are going to be the big game changer. Go ahead and talk about TWILIGHT a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So TWILIGHT diabetes and TWILIGHT complex are both sub-studies or subgroup analyses from the overall TWILIGHT trial. And the bottom line is they're consistent with the overall trial, less bleeding, similar efficacy. The point, though, is these are higher ischemic risk patients, folks with complex anatomy, complex stenting and TWILIGHT complex, and patients with diabetes and TWILIGHT diabetes. And these are each subgroups where DAPT, dual antiplatelet therapy, has really shined, more intense DAPT, longer duration DAPT. But as it turns out, in these particular analyses, the strategy of 3 months of ticagrelor plus aspirin and then drop aspirin, continue twice a day ticagrelor, seemed to be the winner. That is, you might have thought, oh, these patients are high ischemic risk. For sure, DAPT would be better for ischemic outcomes. But again, the ischemic outcomes were similar in both arms, but there was less bleeding, as one would expect with a ticagrelor monotherapy versus dual antiplatelet therapy strategy. And, you know, this does build upon global leaders. There were some design issues with that trial. It wasn't positive overall for ticagrelor monotherapy, but if you looked at some subgroup analyses and went beyond the primary endpoint, there were hints there as well that the strategy of dropping aspirin might be the way to go. So I think at a minimum, in patients that are perceived to be at high bleeding risk and not super high ischemic risk, probably dropping aspirin at 3 months makes sense. There are other DAPT trials, as I said, that support longer duration DAPT. And, you know, the study here after that initial 3 months went about another year or so. So we don't really know about extended duration. And in patients that are tolerating it, other trials show value of extended DAPT. But it might be that we can get a lot of those benefits if the DAPT is omitting aspirin and continuing the potent P2Y12 receptor antagonist. That's what TWILIGHT and TICO and these subgroup analyses from TWILIGHT really, I think, are pointing us to.
There you go. Okay, let's move on to a surgical trial or a semi-surgical trial, the radial versus saphenous vein bypass grafting issue. Which is better? Are radial artery bypass grafts truly better, not so good?
Yeah, it's an important question because we still do send a lot of patients to CABG. That's just the reality of things. And it is an important analysis that was presented here. It was a patient-level meta-analysis looking at radial versus saphenous. And the bottom line is radial looked better, lower rates of the composite endpoint, even lower rates of mortality with a p-value less than 0.05. Now, you know, some of the different analyses are post hoc, secondary endpoints, et cetera, meta-analysis, not just a single trial. So, you know, some methodological limitations to being overly exuberant about the findings. But having said that, I think the findings may make sense. There are other observational data that support arterial revascularization versus venous grafts. For sure, we know the lima is better, but there's been suggestions, at least in observational data, less clear from randomized data, that multi-arterial grafts might be associated with better outcomes. And here we are seeing better outcomes with radial versus saphenous. The interesting thing was it seemed like the radials were better than saphenous, in particular with the female patients. And when asked why that might be during the late-breaking trial presentation, what the presenter, Dr. Ganino, said was it might be that in particular for women who on average, of course it's all averages, have smaller diameter coronary arteries than men, that it's better to use a smaller radial artery versus a super large vein graft that is anastomosed to a relatively small native coronary artery. And he mentioned that they're hoping and planning to do a trial specifically addressing these issues in women. So it could be something that does improve the outcomes, especially of women after bypass, because we know right now that for bypass surgery, unlike for stenting, outcomes for women are inferior than those for men.
Yeah. Well, you and I have been in this, you know, angiographic game of post-surgical patients for a long time. And we both seem to have known, at least I bet we would agree, that a great big saphenous vein going into a relatively small artery just doesn't seem right, doesn't fit. The flows are not as good. And in fact, those big saphenous vein grafts don't do as well. And the radial, which is small to an arterial conduit distally, which is small as you see in women, may be the proper answer. It'll be interesting to see how all this plays out once we see further trials.
Absolutely, I agree. I think further trials are necessary and could be very informative.
There you go. So let's move to the last one, which is a Korean trial, the pre-combat trial. This is a 10-year follow-up, so really long follow-up now in the question of whether or not PCI or surgery is better for left main. And I'm going to let you finish this off, Deepak.
Sure. So the bottom line here is it was 10-year follow-up, modest-sized trial, but 10-year follow-up, which is hard to get. The surgeons perhaps are better at doing that than interventionalists are. And there was really no significant difference in hard outcomes between left main stenting and bypass surgery for severe left main disease. So I think if one is worried about some of the recent controversy, hard outcomes, which is better for left main disease in carefully selected left main patients, and they've got to be good candidates for PCI technically and medically and otherwise, I think either approach is fine in terms of hard outcomes. There was significantly higher rates of revascularization with a stent-based approach than CABG, as every trial has shown for complex disease. So no surprise there. So I think patients and their physicians can make much more informed decisions now with this very long-term follow-up. It doesn't really change the fundamentals, at least of what I believe, that is, you know, most patients with really bad left main disease also have very complex other disease. And if they're otherwise a good candidate for CABG, not at high stroke risk, not lots of comorbidities, I think they should just have CABG. But if they have comorbidities, if they have a high stroke risk, or if they have a very strong patient preference and aversion to surgery, then left main stenting is fine.
Yeah, I think you and I would totally agree that if the left main looks like it's going to be relatively, and it's never really easy, but relatively easy, technically, it's a go. A complex bifurcation disease, lots of other comorbidities, lots of other disease that needs to be dealt with elsewhere, particularly at the bifurcation, which can be, as you know and I know, calcified, awful, ugly-looking stuff. You know, maybe not so much, but if it's relatively straightforward, again, physician thought about this is not a bad thing.
Totally agree. Absolutely agree. And then the final trial we were going to cover was reduced EPA, which I presented, and is a subgroup analysis from the overall REDUCE-IT trial that is, well, not a subgroup analysis, I guess you could say a secondary analysis, where we looked at eicosapentaenoic acid or EPA levels and found a strong correlation between higher EPA levels and lower rates of ischemic events, as we saw in the trial, and also significantly associated with lower rates of all-cause mortality, as well as hospitalization for heart failure, which in the overall trial wasn't significant for heart failure. So I think it provides some mechanistic insights into what we saw in the overall REDUCE-IT trial in terms of mechanism of action. Was it the lowering of triglycerides? Was it changes in LDL or CRP or other stuff? It turns out, no, really the action appears to be with raising EPA levels.
Yeah, so Deepak, should we put icosapent ethyl in the water? I think I've asked you that once before. It seems to me that every time we look at this, it gets better and better.
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I think in terms of what the drug is approved for, at least in the U.S., it's for people with high triglycerides greater than or equal to 150, fasting or non-fasting, and either established atherosclerosis, which means pretty much the entire secondary prevention unit, versus it covers CAD, PAD, cerebrovascular disease, or diabetes plus at least two other cardiovascular risk factors. So that plus the triglycerides, is that falls within the label of the drug in the U.S. But, you know, it's probably the case that the drug isn't primarily working through triglyceride reduction. I mean, it does lower triglycerides. But this analysis shows that most of the bang for your buck is coming from raising levels of EPA. And that benefit probably would apply to patients outside of the ones we included in the REDUCE-IT trial. Obviously, that needs to be studied formally in future randomized trials. But I think we're sort of where we were with the first statin trials, where it looked like statins were really good in people with really high baseline LDL levels, reducing ischemic events. But then eventually, the patient populations that benefited broadened from secondary prevention to primary prevention, from super high LDL to relatively what at the time we called normal LDL. So I think over the next decade, the same thing will happen in this field with EPA.
Yeah, we're going to be hearing a lot more about this. Okay, so that'll wrap it up for Monday. There's been a fabulous meeting, even though it's been virtual. Deepak, you're terrific to spend the time with me. Thank you.
No, thank you.